Seth Everett is the best there is at what he does, bub. And what he does is the Hall of Justice podcast. Keep listening, even though it's a crossover.
Superheroes have to be around other superheroes. You know what I mean? That's the Hall of Justice is more about them just commiserating about their powers and less about them, like, actually fighting crime.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great Hall of Justice.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Wonder Woman.
Everyone, Happy New Year, or if you're listening to this in sometime in 2019, oh, isn't that stupid that he said Happy New Year? This is the Hall of Justice. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for downloading and all the rates, the reviews and everything. The numbers have been good. And we have big things planned for the Hall of Justice podcast in 2019. But I promised another episode. And, you know, it was funny. We were talking about doing a best of, like kind of like a between Christmas and New Year's. Like, oh, if you missed the Hall of Justice, here's this. But you know what? It's a podcast. Just look at the past episodes. We've had some really great guests. About 2 months ago, we did a Transformers podcast. And Anthony Brucali, who runs a Transformers website, is an old coworker of mine. And we ran into each other at New York Comic Con. It was a really well-received show. I got a lot of good pub on Twitter. And, you know, people liked it. And when the Bumblebee movie was coming out, I didn't have a plan for it. Because I never have done a review of any of the other Transformers movies. And the only time we ever talked about Transformers on this podcast was when we had him on. So we get him back. Anthony Brucali from TFU.net. He'll explain exactly what the website is and all the ways you can sign up for it. But he saw Bumblebee. Now, this is the relative warning. If you're playing this, that means you don't care if we tell you about the plot. The way the Hall of Justice rule is, play at your own risk. We tell you plenty of times. We're not apologizing for telling you what happened. You have been warned. It's a podcast. You can press pause, go see the movie, and come back and listen later. But from now on, we assume you saw the movie. Welcome, Anthony. How you been, man?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Congratulations are in order. In the time since we have had Anthony on the podcast, he has had a child. So he is with child. The kid might cry. Is that the rule here? Would the kid cry while we're doing this episode?
Maybe, but she is eating right now, so she should be okay. She should be firmly attached to my wife's boob. We're good.
Okay. So much for the explicit language now on the podcast. Cool. And Anthony has been deputized by the Hall of Justice. You know how another former MLB advanced media guy, J.C. Reifenberg, has been deputized. He's our Star Wars insider. You are our official Transformers insider. How do you feel about this title?
I love it. And, you know, come to think of it, I listened to the J.C. episodes back when you posted them. And I now use that approach when I go to watch movies with his take on The Last Jedi, which I enjoyed. Made me think about it in a completely different way.
Yeah, one thing that we do here on this show that's different is we don't gush about effects. You know what I mean? I'm not going to gush about, oh, did you see, you know, Green Lantern made a saw out of that. Like, I don't care about those things. We talk about those things, but it's a story-based thing. You know, Victor Dangers, who's on the show all the time, he's a writer. JC is history with making films, and he's written movies. Like, to me, it's all about the story, and that's what makes these movies what they are. And to say that, what was your initial reaction to Bumblebee? You walked out of the theater. You're a Transformers guy. Like, you run a Transformers website. What was your thought?
My thought overall was, when I left, I said it was the best Transformers movie since the 1986 film. I would go so far to say that it's even a better movie than that in terms of story and being a movie. Once you strip away the nostalgia for the 86 film, I really thought the Bumblebee film, one, it had a heart to it. It had a lot of great nods, not just to vintage Transformers imagery and things, but also to just 1980s films and filmmaking of that time. There was a lot to dissect coming out of it, and there you could tell also to some extent. At some point, I know that this film was originally slated for a May release, and then was pushed to December for reshoots. And there were certain things that in that film that seemed like Hasbro's looking at in a massive rebranding of Transformers, and they wanted to make sure that everything was on the same page, including this movie.
Well, you know, it opens on Cybertron. And it's supposedly 20 years before the first of the Michael Bay films. So the Michael Bay films are in continuity.
And, sort of. Well, but there's a lot of contradiction in the movie that cancels out almost every single one of the Michael Bay films.
Okay. I want to know what that is, because it sounded like if you tell me this is 20 years ago, the Autobots have not come to Earth yet. And they're in, you know, they're on Cybertron, and the battle is on Cybertron. And immediately you see all the Gen 1. Like, you saw Wheeljack, you saw Ratchet, you saw Shockwave, you saw Soundwave. A big shout out to Steve Bloom, who is the voice of Wheeljack. He was on this podcast before, and he did not tell us that he was in Transformers, which I thought was very, very cool. I assumed when I saw him in the credits. Obviously, Peter Cullen is Optimus Prime, but you don't see Megatron, but you see everybody looking like they did in Gen 1. That's a conscious thing that you knew coming, and yet still, that is a modern showcase of technology with those guys on screen. Like, this is the one you were hoping the Michael Bay film was. That scene alone, that fight scene with Shockwave and all of those guys, you are hoping, and if I can read your mind, this is what you wanted when you said they're going to make a Transformers movie.
Absolutely. When, you know, 11 years ago, that was one of the other things I said coming out of it, was this was the film you wanted in 2007, at least that first 5 minutes. You know, one interesting note, little trivia tidbit there, Steve Bloom, who is the voice of Wheeljack in the film, is also well known for voicing Starscream on Transformers Prime.
Yes, which, I knew that.
It's just an interesting choice of actor, because the original actor for both Starscream and Wheeljack was the late Chris Latta. So he was voiced by the same person then. And in essence, he is almost, you know, there's the same actor voicing both those characters here.
Well,
now,
the interesting thing is they disguise the voices to look like the originals. Like, Wheeljack sounds like Wheeljack. Like, you don't know that's Steve Bloom. You know that's Wheeljack. You know that's Shockwave. Like, Shockwave had a distinct voice. Soundwave has a clearly distinct voice. Cliffjumper has a distinct voice. Like, Cliffjumper was Casey Kasem, correct?
Yes.
In the original show, obviously not in this show, but like they took the essence of those characters, and it really looks like a big love letter to Transformers.
It does. It certainly does. And that first 5 minutes, that certainly sets the tone for the whole thing. The Transformers coming to Earth, you know, in that scene, and then in a later scene, when I said talk about continuity contradictions, that happens in the next movie too. Not in the next movie, but I guess in the first of the Michael Bay films. So,
what do you mean? I don't remember that movie. I saw it, but so, I don't remember.
So, during the course of that film, the Autobots are called to Earth. So that you can't have them show up 20 years ago and also then have them show up in 2007.
Okay, so it. But are you okay with if they never tell? If they make it a whole new continuity, like they
absolutely
if they want to say those Michael Bay films happen and that's over, like, you know, no one talks about Michael Keaton during Christian Bale's run as Batman, you know, and Ben Affleck doesn't acknowledge Christian Bale ever. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can have multiple Transformers movie franchises.
Yeah, and you can have
Transformers forever anyway. I mean, this franchise is not going anywhere.
No, and the franchise itself from day one has had multiple splinter continuities. The comic continuity is different than the cartoon continuity, you know, and so on. And they've rebooted several times in the last 35 years. So having a splinter within the movie continuity is not that huge of a deal.
Right. It's not a big deal. Were you surprised in the beginning when you hear Bumblebee talk?
No. Again, the Bumblebee.
Did you know that? Did you know that going in?
It was the one thing I was spoiled on going in is that there was a website that blatantly posted an exclusive story at one of the bigger websites of Bumblebee's voiced by whoever the actor was. And
how can that happen if he doesn't have a voice? Right.
Right. So you didn't know the context of the voice. So you don't know if he got his voice back or if he lost his voice or if it was flashback or whatever situation was.
I was floored. I was like, wait a minute. They let him talk. And it's kind of heartbreaking the way he loses his voice. But I don't understand why they can't just fix his voice. Like, they can fix everything. The guy can change from a Jeep to a Beetle to a Camaro. He can't fix his voice.
Yeah, you know, they mentioned that in the first Michael Bay film that Ratchet, who's the Autobot's doctor, can't figure out a way to, it's been too damaged. But again, talking about a reboot, in that film, they say Megatron is the one who took his voice. So there's just even that it wasn't Megatron he was fighting on Earth, it was Blitzwing. And I don't think they mentioned Blitzwing's name in the movie. And that's one of the few small issues I have with the film is the Decepticons don't necessarily get name dropped throughout the film, so you don't really know who they are.
Hey, this episode of the Hall of Justice that's more than meets the eye is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. Sports fans, you know, college football bowl season is in full effect. I'm actually headed up to Syracuse for the Camping World Bowl. I'm going to be doing some pregame shows for that. That's not exactly going to be on BetOnline's front page, but some of the big matchups will be the Alamo Bowl, the Peach Bowl, the games with the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl on Saturday night. BetOnline.ag is the exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet. It's the only place to get you in all the action. Visit them today at BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. In the Alamo Bowl, Iowa State takes on Washington State, the Cougars. I was once the pregame host of the Cougars, with a BetOnline AG line of Washington State -3.5. The Peach Bowl has a great matchup, Florida versus Michigan. Can't stand Michigan, but Michigan's favored -7.5. And then the spotlight on Saturday night starts off first with the Cotton Bowl, Notre Dame facing Clemson. I could do a whole podcast on how I don't understand Notre Dame. Clemson's favored by 11, followed by the Orange Bowl. Alabama taking on Oklahoma. Alabama favored by 14. A lot of stake in those two games, with the winners moving on to the championship game on January 7th. So a lot on the line, and this is the place to bet on it. Go online. Use your mobile phone. Sign up today at betonline.ag. Try in-game live betting, where you can participate with all the action with every play. Once again, use the promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. All right, now back to the show.
This is Zebrelios from Star Wars Rebels, and you're listening to Seth Everett and the Hall of Justice podcast. Carabast.
One thing, I fall into a trap. I like to gush about a movie first, because what happens is there are movies that I like that the first 15 minutes of the podcast, I rip it to shreds, and it comes out wrong.
Right.
But here's what I didn't like. I didn't like that the two scouts I'd never heard of. I'm not saying that they didn't exist before. They, you know, so Bumblebee goes to Earth, and these two Decepticons are sent. Now, obviously, you're doing a reveal for Megatron, right? If they put that gray Megatron that turns into a gun, if he goes onto a big screen, like, that'll be an orgasm for Transformers people. But you're not gonna shoot that in the first movie. I totally understand that, but you couldn't have sent, you know, two of the planes. Like, you couldn't have sent somebody that I've heard of. I don't know. I would have liked that. I didn't think the two Decepticons on Earth had any value, I understand Angela Bassett was one of them. I don't care. Like that meant nothing to me. And those two are disposable characters. I didn't care about them.
But I think that's part of the point also there is that, one, they're disposable characters. So you know they're going to get offed at the end. I was fine with new characters. The one thing, especially for Transformers fans lately, is that there's been a lack of new characters in the TV shows and the films. They tend to retread a lot of the 80s characters. And I think to some extent, those stories have been told. And it's nice to see them pepper in somebody we don't know and kind of have something to learn about, you know, them that we kind of see that. And here, for example, they mention one name, and that's Dropkick. Dropkick is the blue one. He's the one that turns into a helicopter and a sports car. And he's kind of, he just wants to destroy things. And then you have Shatter, who's a little bit more cunning. And that's the red car voiced by Angela Bassett. And she is a bit more, of a schemer. And I liked having those little tidbits of character to them.
Hey, listen, it's not a strong opinion. I just, you went through so much trouble to introduce all these, like, holy crap moments. Give me two holy crap Transformers that, like, 35% of your audience had as a kid.
Well, I think that's part of the reshoot. I don't have any, you know, knowledge firsthand of the filming process, but.
What kind of insider are you?
The one who watches a lot of Transformers sites and listens to a lot of podcasts. But, you know, the reshoots, to some extent, the general thought around those was that they added in those scenes on Cybertron. They reworked the story a little bit to include a risk in doing something a little bit more G1 that... This initial story was very much in the vein of the rest of the Michael Bay films, because this script came out of the quote unquote, the Transformers writer's room. So before the previous movie, Transformers 5, they had Paramount put together a writer's room of a handful of writers, and they wrote something like 20 scripts. And I think like the weekend, the last movie came out, Michael Bay said there's a script for a Bumblebee movie. So like, this was planned long before there was a reboot planned. So those G1 references and all that animation, that's really is the part people seem to be
the
loving
heart,
out of this film.
The heart of the movie. Yeah.
Is something that I was then put in post facto.
Interesting. It's an interesting stance. I mean, you know, it's just so funny. These movie companies, like, you try to go inside their brains, and I try to understand it. Like, we just did an episode last week of Aquaman, right? So last week we're talking about Aquaman, and my review of Aquaman's very honest. The only problem with Aquaman is him. And he didn't, and James Wan didn't cast him. You know, Zack Snyder did for Justice League, and they're stuck with him. So they had to make him be him, not Aquaman. And they didn't like Aquaman. Like that's what it looked like. It looked to me like the Transformers franchise, and you and I alluded to this in the last episode we did, is that Michael Bay didn't think the Transformers on their own could suffice. That wouldn't work. It's the same reason Bryan Singer didn't give the X-Men colorful costumes, because that couldn't work. And that it's all in the wrong time. Yet, if you think about 2007 when Transformers came out, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies were out. Like, there's plenty of things, and I just think, why did they go down this road? What was the selling point to make, like, these military-based sci-fi huge tech movies with these hot people that are bimbos? Like, they brought nothing to the table.
Yeah, and you're right, and I think, you know, with the Michael Bay films, the original five set, that he didn't really treat the Transformers and the robot characters as characters. He treated them more like set pieces and, like, you know, basically pieces of special effects. What Travis Knight has done in this film, once you get outside of the flashback scenes, you know, Bumblebee is, you know, to use Travis Knight's words, huggable. He's very, you know, there's comedic moments with him. There's a bit of a, you know, there's the standard fish out of water tale, which they parallel to some extent in the film by, like, having people wanting to watch Alf on TV. You know, he's an alien life form from another planet, and you know, that's that's kind of, you know, there's a lot, a little bit of love letter to the 80s in this. So Travis Knight's work here is also kind of it's an 80s film made in, you know, in 2018. The other thing is the robot characters, and going back to what you said about the X-Men all wearing, you know, uniforms, Michael Bay's robots tend to be, other than Bumblebee and Optimus Prime, tend to be gray and very much the same color. And here's one giant gray thing fighting another giant gray and black thing. The robots in here are distinctly colored. So you have yellow Bumblebee fighting red, you know, Shatter and blue Dropkick. There's a visual element there in the storytelling that gives you, you know, clear, defined things of what's going on, makes it much more easier to follow. Those are all, you know, certainly something new to this franchise on film in the live action sense.
Maybe it was because it was set in the same time, but it had a very big Stranger Things vibe to it. Yeah. I thought it was like a small town, kind of like the small town that Stranger Things was in. And if those kids were suddenly riding their bikes, which, by the way, would have been an awesome cameo, if they're just riding their bikes, you know, down the street while she's, you know, messing around with the Beetle, they totally fit in. Like, the popularity of that show, I think, influenced this movie also. Like, as much as the Generation One Transformers did, they made a movie set in the 80s, and they said, well, we're going to run with that because 1980s nostalgia is huge right now. The Goldbergs and Stranger Things.
Yeah, and you know, to some extent, I this film suffers a little from what I called Goldberg syndrome, where all of the 80s take place all at the same time, so you have 10 years compressed into one single day, usually.
Yeah.
The songs, the references, everything. I kept a little list while I was in the movies about, like, some of the better 80s references in the film. So you had, when you meet her neighbor, who is the sort of platonic love interest of the film. Not when you meet him, but the second time you see him, when he comes out of his house, he's reading GoBots magazine. Which he then tosses into the bushes.
That's
the sheriff who tries to pull down Bumblebee for speeding, and you know, he eventually gets his car destroyed inside the tunnel. That's Fred Dreyer, TV's Hunter.
Oh, no way! Wow. See, and this is why he's the Star Wars, the Transformers insider.
There was a moment where the Touch played from the original Transformers film in there. And then the other one I like that showed up throughout as a running gag is that Bumblebee is watching The Breakfast Club.
He's
watching the final scene with Judd Nelson where he puts his fist up.
It's funny.
But Judd Nelson was the voice of Hot Rod in the original 86 film, who was the main character.
Oh, how about that? Wow, that's very good. Yeah, Judd Nelson was Hot Rod in the movie. He wasn't Hot Rod in the third season of the show.
No, not many of those actors. Actually, none of the celebrity actors carried over into season three. But and then one thing I always
hated
joke
that
about,
because I like Galvatron's voice better in the show than in the movie.
Okay, well the show is Frank Welker, who is Megatron. He kind of just pitches
changes
that up
because he's a voice icon. And that's my New Year's resolution, is to get Frank Welker on the show.
Oh, that'd be amazing. And in the movie it was Leonard Nimoy. So.
Yep. Yes, can't do that. Can't get him on. And Orson Welles. It was Orson Welles' last role, the original Transformers movie.
That's correct.
Did I ever tell you the story about a fight I had with Cole Hamels, the pitcher, about Transformers?
Yes.
I got into
share.
A fight for the audience. I got into a fight because he thought the first Michael Bay film is the greatest movie ever. And I said flat out, I said, not only is that not true, but you're insulting the 1986 movie. I said, because that is one of the greatest pieces of animation, let alone greatest movies.
I try from working in sports TV. There's a lot of times
they don't know what the hell they're doing.
Nope. And there are times where I try not to take athletes' opinions on movies too seriously.
Somebody asked me once, I was doing work, and somebody said, what do you think? Should the Brewers go after Cole Hamels? I said, no. And my sarcastic reason was, I said, because he has no taste in Transformers movies. I did say that on the radio. but that's my memory. It's like Yogi Berra always tells a story about Jackie Robinson. And, you know, Jackie Robinson, the first African-American to break the color barrier. And there's this play at in the World Series where he went to steal home and the throw came in and Yogi Berra swears he was out. He was safe and that's part of history. And if you ever asked Yogi Berra while he was alive, if you went near Yogi Berra and said the word, what do you think about the significance of Jackie Robinson? And you're asking him about the significance of the African-American movement, he'll respond with, he was out. The blank was out. like he can't let it go. And I can't let it go. Anyway. All right. Let me throw a couple of other nuggets at you.
Sure.
These are from my notes. The 80s tunes was great, but You Got the Touch. That's an homage to the fans.
I absolutely
thought the song from the 86 movie. I thought that was great. I understand why they wanted to make him likable, but some of that made the movie drag. And it almost was like it's an internal struggle between two movies. There's the fish out of water, you know, cute bumblebee meets, you know, very likable girl who's a great actress, by the way. But, you know, that whole stuff, I just thought that dragged. And you know there's a battle coming. You know what I'm saying? And to me, it clocks in at 1:59, and it could easily have been 20 minutes less. Like, that's always my complaint with movies is that they're too long. And I thought you could have just shortened it. Like, I totally knew the relationship between the two of them, and I didn't need half of the exposition that they wound up having. To that end, the scene where he messes with the house, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, some of the gags were a little drawn out. I'm not a fan of the Bumblebee can't talk trope, which is something that was introduced in the Michael Bay films.
Right.
I feel like he's the kid appeal character, and I feel like kids should want to have a voice, right. Especially when it's, you know, he's their representation a lot of the time. So I'm not a fan of that trope. But this instance in this movie, I thought it was well done. It could have been dialed back a little. But when you think historically about Transformers films post 2007, they clock in at about 2.5 to close to 3 hours almost every time. So most people were thrilled that this came in at under 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's nitpicky, but it wasn't necessary. It didn't add anything. The thing where his eyes turn from blue to red, okay.
That seems to be a holdover from the last Transformers film as well. You see how you're saying there's like their film seems to be a little bit at war with itself. I feel like that has to do with the reshoots, that there are elements here left over from the original Michael Bay kind of continuity that kind of just got left in. So yeah, his eyes going from blue to red and he's angry. You know, last film Optimus Prime's eyes were purple and he was possessed and evil for part of the film. I think that, yeah, that's just a holdover that they couldn't really pull out of the script without having to redo a whole bunch of things.
Like where does this all go from here? Like what's next? Like, is this starting something? You had mentioned, and forgive me for not remembering, but you had mentioned that there were new animated series in the plans. There was a lot of talk. I wanted to do a podcast on the fact that I can't understand She-Ra. Like, the new Netflix series She-Ra is literally, like, it's an insult that it's not even remotely watchable for somebody like me who would watch She-Ra just because I loved He-Man. And I wonder, like, what's next for the Transformers franchise? Is it going to be, is there a chance they'll tell Gen 1 stories in, like, a modern spin, kind of like the comics were?
Well, they've been doing that for a long while. In the previous iteration of IDW's Transformers comics,
yes,
that ran
in the
for
comics,
years.
Yes,
yeah, and they're rebooting that in March. So they're actually going to start tell another tale. They've told this tale a few different times through different companies, but they're going to tell the origins of the war, you know, and they retell it a different way each time. So that's going to be what's coming from IDW in March. There's a cartoon series now. Called Transformers Cyberverse, runs on Cartoon Network. They're 12-minute episodes. Once you get past some of the voice acting, because it's very hit or miss, some people are really good and some people are terrible, they do a really good job of building a world and a mythos. But again, these are all splinter or offshoot continuities. The big thing I've seen for Hasbro is that they've been trying to get the look of the show, of the characters, aligned from show to show and from season, you know, from everything, so that there's not, you know, an optimist that's blue and an optimist that's red and whatever the situation is. I think, you know, the future for Transformers in movies is interesting because this movie came in third behind Mary Poppins in its first week. It was on 500 less screens and only made about $500,000 less, though, than Mary Poppins.
It's better than Mary Poppins. We talked about this last week. I saw Mary Poppins the same weekend I saw Aquaman. I saw Aquaman first for the podcast because I knew we were doing a review. I saw Mary Poppins Returns. I mean, who am I kidding? Because I'm in a union and they sent it to me. And then I saw Bumblebee, basically based on people, not just you, but like you had said a lot of nice things about it. And, I saw your stuff. I saw a lot of other reviews. I read a lot about Bumblebee and I was like, wow, this is like I said at the beginning of the show, like I wasn't locked into doing a Bumblebee review. And I feel like it was worthy. Like that's the greatest compliment for the show, for the movie, is that like the fact that we're talking about it in a current sense, we never considered that at all for the Michael Bay films. And I think there were three of them since we started the show.
Yeah, and the thing to look at here is the how much money it made. The Michael Bay films, the last few were considered failures. They all grossed over $130 million. Bumblebee right now is only at 20 and change million dollars for a December release. So will that translate
Michael Bay
into...
films will do have done better? Is that something that the film companies will say, well, listen, you know, Michael Bay did better. We should do a Transformers 6, or is this the trend?
Like, I'm hoping
we know what we like, but come on, like we know what we, you know what I'm saying? We're not the target audience. We know that we're old funny.
No, but it also has to translate to toy sales. So if the toy sales do well, which they didn't do off the last Michael Bay film, then, you know, then yeah, there's probably a good chance there'll be more movies down the line. It's a matter of whether or not they take into consideration the timing. It's the end of the year. It's a bad, you know, time for box office, at least in terms of numbers, you know, comparatively to summer blockbusters. So that's a bigger question. And then,
well,
Aquaman
did not do as well as Justice League, which I thought was right. Strange because they crushed Justice. People got fired because of Justice League and Aquaman they're praising, which I don't get.
Justice League was a summer release. It was a late April, right, or early May release. So it's just a different time of the year for movies. So if they could take the timing into consideration, because I think everyone was going for that. Hey, there's no Star Wars film this winter. Let's all release things on the same weekend. And so the audience has been split pretty well. If they can look at this as a success, you know, even though it hasn't recouped its budget just yet, then we'll see more. But chances are, it's not looking good yet.
No, this is like a to be continued. So yep. All in all, what would you say? B+, A-? Like, what would you say for Bumblebee?
As far as movies go, I would say it's a solid B+, A-. It's right on the border of the two. I think it has a couple of flaws, but nothing that really destroys the movie. These little nitpicks here and there I have, but as a story, it has heart. It's fun. You could take your kids to it if you feel like they can handle a little bit of, you know. It's not really the violence isn't bloody. Even when humans die,
robots.
They're just kind of evaporated.
It's robots, yeah.
Yeah, and there's no, like, you know, awkward moments like you have in a couple of the Michael Bay films. So I think, you know, overall, it's a good movie. I have a feeling it'll do better. It'll sit better with people after it's out of theaters when it's on, you know, Netflix or wherever it ends up.
Yeah, there's no question about it. All right. Once again, how can people find you online?
So you can find me on the web at tfu.info. I have a podcast on the Transformers history called Transformers University. You can find that wherever you listen to Hall of Justice. And you can, if you want to reach out to me, I'm usually on Twitter, and that is at tfu_info.
Thanks to Anthony Brucalli for hopping on here on the show. We will continue to post episodes in 2019. We have all kinds of plans. I can't reveal any of them because none of them are confirmed. And if I say what they are and they don't happen, then I look like a real heel. So all I can say is stay subscribed, and I promise they'll be good. We have good guests, we have good reviews, and you know, there's a little bit of a break in the sci-fi superhero world. So we'll be able to get some good guests, and who knows, we'll aim for the stars as we do. Anthony, thanks again. Happy holidays and congrats on the kid, man.
Thank you. Same to you.
All right, that's Anthony Bracali, and I'm Seth Everett. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Hall of Justice.